we've learned anything from these past couple of years, my fellow Americans, it's that personal medical freedom and liberty are in crisis. America Out Loud Pulse brings together the top experts in healthcare-related fields to keep you a beat ahead.
Just who is medical care supposed to benefit? Is it the people, or is it the insurers, pharma giants, and government bureaucrats? I'm Dr. Marilyn Singleton, and welcome to this episode of America Out Loud Pulse. The Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, aka Obamacare, really hasn't turned out as advertised, has it? It doesn't protect patients, and it doesn't make insurance more affordable. And the 2010 lie of the year, if you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor, has become a sick joke. There was a time when patients got medical care from a doctor, not a healthcare system. And now we have such high costs of hospitalization, and these costs rose faster than any other service over the past 20 years. And true, some due to the advancements in technology, no doubt about that. But then we have the third payer party system, where the person receiving the service is not the one paying for it. This sort of disconnect has allowed prices to go up and up and up. It's also put a middleman between patients and their doctors. And then the doctors have more and more rules and their hands are tied, and all they're trying to do is give the best care to their patient. And then the system, it's so opaque and no transparency that patients don't even know how they can lower their costs. So this all leaves one to wonder, who is in charge of patient care these days? Is it the guy with the purse strings? Well, it's time to put an end to this system. And my guest will share his ideas on how to make medical care more accessible and more affordable while still having high quality. I know it's a lot to ask for, and I can't wait to hear from David Balot. He's the director on the Right on Healthcare Initiative with Texas Public Policy Foundation. He is a hospital industry expert with more than 20 years of healthcare industry leadership and executive management experience with a special expertise in healthcare finance. David, who ran for Congress, bless his heart, uses his perspective to counsel members of Congress and the state of Texas House of Representatives, and he is their healthcare advisor. He's a published op-ed columnist and an active speaker and commentator on matters of health policy. Welcome, David Balot.
Thank you so much, Marilyn, and I appreciate the kind words, and I take all the blessings I can get. That's a very Texan thing to say. Bless your heart. It's not always a compliment, though, depending on context.
And in your case, it's a good thing.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
So, you know, we know there's lots of flaws in the healthcare system. And I almost hate to use that word. You know, I'm like, no, it's medical care. And that's the notion that I feel like we need to get back to, where we want good quality care for the most people at a reasonable cost. How did our medical care turn into such a financial nightmare?
Well, you used another word that I found interesting as well. You know, you used flaw. Flaw usually refers to something that was inadvertent or an unintended consequence, which is a common phrase when talking about government. I'm not so sure that they were flaws. I believe that many of the problems that we have today that contribute to the lack of affordability, the decrease in quality, the trouble with getting connected with your physician as your partner, I believe many of those were intentional and by design.
Whoa, design for what?
Well, to benefit special interests. That's how many of our political systems work. It's often the case that those that write the bigger checks are able to get the language that they need into bills that pass.
And it seems like no matter how much we try to pull together as individual doctors or individual patients, we'll never have as much money as the hospital association or the pharmaceutical association.
Well, that's true, but that's not the only way to do it. I think that's and that can be represented by the success of free care. We don't have a lot of money. Our organization is mostly volunteer. That's not my vocation. It's more of a passion of mine, to be honest. But the impact that we've made is significant. So how did we do that without any money? Well, we appealed to the people at the grassroots. What is that money that is put out by special interests for? Well, it's to help politicians get reelected. So it's very meaningful to those politicians when they hear from their constituents. And as we've grown as an organization, speaking of free to care, you know, and now we have 34 representative organizations that represent, you know, over 8 million people nationally, including over 70,000 physicians. And those other ones are, you know, they're medical professionals as well, nurses and what have you. So when we put out a call to action to say, you need to call your representative, they do. We have tens of thousands of comments and calls and emails and letters that go to various representatives. And when they understand that that was originated by Free to Care, they listen. So that's been the way that we've approached it. We have created an on-the-ground army that have the ear of their elected politicians.
Well, I hope people hear that it's worthwhile to pick up the phone, call your representative. And sometimes when you leave messages, it doesn't even have to be your representative. Sometimes they say, we don't want to hear from you if you're not in our district, but others are willing to listen. So I think everybody is so disturbed by feeling like we don't have any power. But what you just said, you know, is good for my heart. It lets people know that it does work, and it might be slower than writing a big check, but we just have to keep pushing.
We just really keep pounding. Mm-hmm. And let me share something with you that I found very surprising the first time I heard it. And I think you and your audience might feel the same way. I heard from one particular office, and this was echoed by a couple of others when I brought it up, when they receive around 10 phone calls on the same issue in a given day, they consider that to be a groundswell. 10, only 10 calls. So it really is that simple. And if we can get enough people to do that and to do it consistently, we can start to change the hearts and minds of these people.
Well, we'll start at the top here. I'm so glad to have a positive note that what we say won't just be more blah, 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 blah. That if people understand why we pay so much for healthcare and where are places that the cost is driven up, they'll even know what to say if one of these Congress critters or state house people actually ask them a question. Right. So tell me, all right, where are some of the places that there's waste? We all hear about fraud, but where's other waste and how do people perpetrate this fraud?
Well, I think it's important that we're all speaking the same language first before we get into that. Okay. When you and I, and I'm so glad at the beginning of this discussion, you made a distinction between healthcare and medical care. Medical care is the practice of medicine. Healthcare is the business of healthcare. It's the business of providing those services to patients. When you hear a politician, primarily at the federal level, when you hear a politician use the word healthcare, I want that to trigger something in your mind. I want you to understand that they're not talking about healthcare. They're talking about health insurance. And we need to stop conflating the two terms. Healthcare is not health insurance and vice versa. Healthcare is what happens between doctor and patient. Health insurance is a financial vehicle to pay for extraordinary events. That should be our foundational working definitions to understand what it is that we're talking about. So understanding those, let's talk about the problems. I like to always, you know, I did turnarounds when I was in the hospital business. I'd go into failing organizations. And it's always, for me, really important to understand what are the root causes of the issue. So let's look at healthcare. What is healthcare? What is medical care? It is fundamentally, at its foundation, the relationship between physician and patient. And let's think over the last 20 years, what has happened to that relationship? Number one, your physician has gone from facing you, putting hands on you, to now sitting in a corner, facing away from you, pounding on a keyboard. They've relegated the profession to a highly paid data entry clerk working for insurance companies and people that are focused on reimbursement. Well, that's not medicine. And you and your colleagues know that. The other thing is that even in that scenario, you're seeing patients for less and less and less time because the financial impact is just been devastating to independent practices. And we've seen less and less independent practices. Well, how does that translate into a problem? As physicians and other medical professionals are gobbled up and employed by these hospitals, insurance companies, private equity groups that are consolidating amongst themselves even, it is making healthcare more and more and more expensive to the point that people don't want to go anymore because they don't know what to expect when it comes to how much they're going to have to pay. So we've got a lot of issues, and that was just a high level review. We've got consolidation. We've got the employment of physicians where they're not independent. We've got physicians not really treating patients and practicing the art of diagnosis. And we've got more of a focus on reimbursement than we do on practice of medicine.
Well, that sure is the truth. And there's so many studies that validate exactly what you said. There was a huge study in California of the merging of these various California healthcare systems. And they showed that the prices went up and the access actually went down. That great big study. And that was just out here. And I'm sure similar findings would be if you went other places. And everybody knows just in regular services, lack of competition makes prices go up. And I tell you, the latest survey of doctors, this is just going to kill you, and you probably already know this, but for the audience, only 5 years ago, it was that 40-some percent of doctors were employed by a healthcare system or by a hospital. Now it's 73%. So we're talking only 27% of doctors are out there in independent practice and keeping up that whole system of the doctor-patient relationship. And the other thing, when you talk about consolidation of the services, there's consolidation of the insurers. There was a time, and I know, David, you may know the number even better than I, that there are over 800 insurance companies that offered health insurance. Now, it's a handful. So again, we don't have competition anymore.
No, with the insurers, there's an acronym we use called BUCA, B-U-C-A-H, Blue Cross, the Blues, United, Cigna, Aetna, and Humana. It's just a handful. You're right. We've gone from hundreds to really five primary players. And it varies from state to state, to be honest. But you're seeing it in hospitals. You're seeing it amongst the pharmacy benefit managers. There are really only three that control 85% of the market there. The group purchasing organizations on the inpatient side that function just like the pharmacy benefit manager. There are really only five to seven that are significant players there. So the entire industry has gone to a consolidation strategy, and it helps them in their particular segment, but it doesn't help patients.
Well, we're certainly seeing that now. Well, we always don't want to just be poor, pitiful Patty on this show. And we do like to give people solutions. And this is going to be a show that's long on solutions. We know the complaints. Everybody has them. So let's get going before we have to take a break. And just kind of what's the overarching principle behind the solutions you're going to tell us about?
Well, I think before I get there, I need to take a step back. You know, we did some value laddering, which is not quite polling. You know, polling asks people what they believe. Value laddering asks them to believe it. And it was healthcare specific. And what was really surprising is that regardless of your political affiliation, the values were largely the same. What do people want from a healthcare system? They want peace of mind and a sense of being in charge. Well, how do we get those? I think that's the direction we go in when we talk about solutions. What needs to happen is we need to have a system in place where we can have a relationship with our doctor. We need to be able to leverage technology. We need to be able to get away from having to use insurance for something that can be more affordable outside of insurance. And the one model that comes to mind is direct primary care or direct specialty care that's now surging, but direct primary care has been the predecessor. During COVID, for example, most every model was shrinking and really suffering in the healthcare space. The only model that grew was direct primary care because people were losing their jobs, they didn't have access. And so they found this new model, and it's a subscription-based, and they had 24/7 access to their doctor. And they were able to ask when things were uncertain and they didn't know what to do. They'd get on their phone and they would send a message on their app or text their physician or call them up and say, I'm nervous about this, or I need to come in and get tested, or whatever the case may be. But they got care. They had an advocate.
On that note, and again, a positive note, that there was a way for patients to have somebody on their side, we're going to go to a little break. And in the meantime, I just want to thank everybody for listening to America Out Loud Pulse. We've got free apps on Apple, Android, and Alexa. You can hear Pulse every weekday at 5 p.m. Eastern with an encore at 10 p.m. and on iHeartRadio the next morning, 8 a.m. on your way to work, I hope. All the shows go direct to podcast in 24 hours, and you can hear it on Apple, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, Stitcher, iHeart, and many others. Make it easy. Just bookmark AmericaOutLoud.com.
Oral hygiene hasn't changed in 50 years. Brush, floss, repeat. We're told to use fluoride, which doesn't really address the acid-creating bacteria. That is where the dentist-recommended Spry Dental Defense System shines. Spry products contain xylitol, a natural sugar, which helps get rid of those nasty, smelly acid-creating bacteria in our mouth. The best way to care for your teeth and gums is by using Spry. The Spry Dental Defense System has a wide variety of products: toothpaste, mouthwash, mints, and chewing gums that are designed to work together to keep your teeth clean and mouth healthy and smelling sweet all day long. To get your oral care back on track in an easy, effective, and very tasty way, switch to Spry today. Ask your dentist about xylitol and the Spry products. Spry can be found online and at all fine natural product retailers.
Here on America Out Loud, we emphasize optimal health, and air is the most essential element for life. The average person inhales over 35 pounds of air every day, yet we seldom think about how to rid the air of pathogens swiftly and safely when we need to. The Genesis Fogger Plus HOCL is the only way to quickly and naturally restore air to its optimal condition. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud for a free ebook on everything you need to know about HOCL and receive a 15% discount on the Genesis Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you'll be ready for what's next.
America Out Loud beats to the pulse of our nation. We know when you're angry, you're troubled, confused, glad, and thankful. We know you because we are you. Join us as we explore the most important issues of our time. We are America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
So, we were here talking about solutions, and a big one, and as David said, during COVID that came up, even though it's been around for years, is direct primary care. That's 24 hours, 7 days a week, access to a physician. So tell me a bit more about that.
Well, you know, I think the best way for me to tell you about it is just to tell you a story. I use it for myself. And there was a day earlier last year, I have to chuckle because it's a bit embarrassing for me. But, you know, I was working with my son in the backyard and I was starting to feel some chest pain and some shooting pain in my arm. And I thought, well, that's not great. So I texted my direct primary care doctor. It was a Sunday morning. And he called me within a matter of minutes. Because I did tell him it was urgent. And I told him what was going on, gave him the situation. And he said, well, do you have a blood pressure cuff? And I said that I had one, the little wrist ones, which are not great. And I don't advise that you get a regular, a real one that you put on your arm. And it was giving him very different blood pressure readings, depending on which arm it was on. That was largely my fault because I didn't know how to put it on right. But based on the information I gave him, he said, David, I'm just not comfortable with what you're telling me, and I'm going to advise that you go to the ER. So I told him what emergency room I was going to, gave him the phone number and the address. He said, text me as soon as you get there. And when I presented, they wheeled me back, as they usually do with chest pain patients. And as they're wheeling me back, I hear the ER doctor on the phone with my physician. And he was giving him my history, what was going on, why I was presenting there. The ER physician walked in, said, I've talked to your doctor. He's given me the background information. We have a plan. And as the day wore on and the tests were showing that, I wasn't having a cardiac event, the ER doctor says, let me just, you know, order you a CT. And I said, well, why don't you check back with my DPC doctor, please, if you don't mind. I don't want to tell you how to practice medicine, but I'd prefer that you work with my doctor, please. And he did that. He was happy to do so. And they talked it over and they said, you know, we don't think that this is absolutely necessary right now. We're just going to follow up and monitor you and see if things are okay. Please check in with your doctor, which he called me every day after that. But not only did I get what I thought to be really good care, it was not as expensive as it could have been.
Well, you bring up the price. And so this is something I think a lot of people wonder, that how does direct primary care work? And what if you don't have a lot of money?
Well, it's more than you would pay, because it's a subscription you're paying per month. But when you look at how much you pay over the period of a year, you're going to spend a whole lot more. Another example, I'm right around 50 years old, so I go in for a checkup and physical, and I'm due for another one. So I was ordered just a number of lab panels. When I had Blue Cross before having a DPC doctor, this litany of lab panels would cost me anywhere from $1,500 to $1,800 at LabCorp. Because I'm using my DPC doctor's negotiated rates with LabCorp, and he pays it, and he just charges my credit card. I got the receipt, and it was $71.53. So the savings alone from that, so let's just assume conservatively, it's $1,000 savings. It more than makes up for the benefit of paying the membership and using that doctor, because getting a CAT scan for $250 as opposed to $1,250, or an MRI for $400 instead of the thousands that it costs those, you're going to get the benefit from having that doctor's network, that doctor's ability to navigate the system in such a way that it will benefit you both clinically and financially.
Well, certainly that's the same with drugs. Most states do allow doctors to give out, not give, or even sell some drugs direct from their office. Correct. People would be stunned to see the difference in pricing. I remember I take a very inexpensive million-year-old drug for high blood pressure, hydrochlorothiazide. And if you buy it wholesale, you can get a bottle of 1,000 pills for less than the copay that they ask people to pay in many of these drug systems. And patients don't know that. So many drugs, and really the ones that most people use, are dirt cheap if you just get it direct from the wholesaler. But that doesn't make any money for the whole chain of people who are in this line of healthcare with their hand out. Give me some money. I'm another pig feeding at the trough. So, yeah.
Well, and there are organizations out there. One in particular actually I reached out to in preparation for this meeting, and they gave me a coupon code for your members. But they're a direct online pharmacy. They don't make any money on the medications. They just sell it to you at cost, but there is a membership fee to belong to the pharmacy, which I found to be fascinating. And that's the only way that they make money. It's $140 annual membership, but they gave us a coupon code for your group to take $30 off of that if they type in RX39. The savings has just been phenomenal. I was talking to a physician I believe is a neuroimmunologist and has a lot of MS patients. And a generic called Tecfidera is $10,000 a month at the pharmacy.
Whoa.
Online through this organization, because they don't want to gouge people, it was $22.84.
That's just stunning. And you wonder how can they get away with it? It seems to be once you bring people in the middle between the doctor and the patient, between the doctor and the pharmacist and the patient, the costs explode.
Well, it's not always just the doctor and the pharmacist. You know, there are some folks that don't do great things, but for the most part, I think physicians and pharmacists, the people who are on the front lines, they're really trying to work for the patient, but they're having to navigate an almost impossible bureaucracy. So let's talk about pharmacy drugs, for instance. One of the big things that we advocate for is the education and the change in how pharmacy benefit managers function in this country. A pharmacy benefit manager is used by an insurance company supposedly to go out and negotiate lower cost for the benefit of their members, but they never pass that benefit on to their patients. The insurance company largely keeps it for themselves, and as well as the PBMs, because they own each other now. But why do they get to do it in such a way that it looks like a kickback? Well, it's because it is a kickback. In 2003, PBMs were given a gift. They were given a safe harbor from a particular law. That law is the anti-kickback statute. So what does that mean? That means they don't have to comply with a law that prevents them from asking for kickbacks. Think about that, Marilyn. They have been given permission by the federal government to have a business model similar to that of the mafia.
Well, but I'll tell you, this PBM problem is so big, I'm actually having an entire show on just PBMs. So I tell you, when people realize how many fingers are in the pie, they'll be stunned and realize why the costs are high, that it isn't that the doctor's charging too much or some of the things that some of the people in power try to blame it on.
Well, but even if you look at the physician, you referenced a study on how many physicians are now employed. They're completely removed from pricing. When you have 73% of all physicians employed, they're not responsible for that pricing at all. So if the finger is being pointed at them, they're being used as a scapegoat. and that really doesn't have any power to make any change.
Well, you bring up that point again now with all these doctors employed or somehow within the system, they aren't the ones who are making some of the big decisions.
Correct.
They're given algorithms or treatment patterns and whatnot that they're supposed to follow. And who knows what happens to them if they speak up.
Well, and I'll give you an example. Here in Texas, we're a Corporate Practice of Medicine Act state, which means non-physicians cannot employ physicians. But like every good law, there are loopholes. In the loophole, it still does say that physicians must be allowed to make independent medical decision making for the benefit of the patient. Well, we know that that's not happening, and there's no enforcement. If a physician were to refer outside of the system to, say, a cash CT that we mentioned earlier, or to a surgeon that he thinks would provide better benefit or better care to a patient, I have spoken with many that say that when they've done that, that they have been censured.
Wow. And who, you know, who'd have thunk it that our job as a doctor is to advocate for the patient. And if advocating for the patient means having to talk to your boss and say, hey, hold the phone here. This medicine is the best medicine. And I realize it's not on your formulary, but this is the one that's going to work for this patient. And this isn't just hypothetical, because all medicines, even if allegedly they're the same or very close, they aren't the same in each patient. Our bodies are all different. Some people, this came up with thyroid medications. People tried to do substitutions. The patients didn't do as well. And lo and behold, the medicines weren't quite the same. Yet these formularies said, nope, you've got to substitute that one. And this is happening more and more as they're looking for ways to shave off costs, but don't think like what you were talking about, like DPC. I always hate that expression, think outside the box, but we've got to, because just piling on and or shaving off the edges of the system we already have, it's only made it worse.
Yeah, without question. Without question. And I'm thankful for your show, because we need to be about solutions. We need to not, it's so easy to throw rocks. And there are a lot of bad ideas to throw rocks at. But we need to come together to have a set of solutions. And that's what Free to Care has done. We've put together a document that we believe will address many of the issues. We do push back. I need to say this. We do push back on, well, what's your solution? We don't believe there is one solution. We think that there are a multitude of solutions, because we have a multitude of problems. And anyone who says that they have a plan, that this is if we do this one thing, that it will fix healthcare, you may want to look at them with a jaundiced eye, because that's just not realistic. And for those of us who have worked in the industry and understand just the sheer silliness of so much of it, recognize that we have a lot of work to do, and we need to work together to get it functioning in a proper way.
Well, let's say I'll just mention something that a lot of people think about, and they'll say, as we talk more about these solutions, some of which do mean that patients have to pay more money out of pocket, we think about the Oath of Hippocrates. And the oath says that we're going to give good care to people, whether free or slave. Okay, good care to no matter what the patient's status is. So what do you do for a safety net for people who can't afford medical care?
Well, I think so if you're talking about a true safety net, the vulnerable for whom Medicaid was intended, there's a constant fight here in Texas, for instance, to expand Medicaid. And I've had a number of meetings with people, and they'll say, well, David, we're leaving this much money on the table. What is the financial impact of not accepting it versus accepting it? And I'll say, look, hold the phone. That's all irrelevant. it doesn't mean anything, because let's look at the real issue. Are we not to care for the vulnerable for whom the program was intended? We're not going to, you know, Medicaid's not going anywhere. Medicare's not going anywhere. So let's optimize it and make it work for the people for whom it was intended. Bringing on able-bodied adults through an expansion of Medicaid would only crowd those people for whom it was intended out. And that's not caring or compassionate or good sense for that matter. So we've been focusing on that patient care mentality and looking at everything through that lens.
You know, it's interesting when we think about Medicaid. My father was a general practitioner, and he had a large portion of his practice be people who were poor. And he practiced well before Medicaid came in. And when Medicaid came in, he didn't take it. And it was like, shock of all shocks, Dr. Singleton doesn't take Medicaid. Well, his patients actually did better, because what Dr. Singleton did was charge people what they could afford. If somebody could afford $5 for the visit, then they paid $5. And we had a large Hispanic patient population. And I grew up on Mexican food. We got paid in tamales, enchiladas, whatever we wanted. That was his payment. And those were the good old days. So now, if you were to get paid that way or charge people what they could afford, that would be healthcare fraud. It's like they took any charitable inner soul out of medicine with these new rules.
Well, you know, it's interesting. So
I'm going to have to take a quick break here, and then we'll get right back on this. So thank you, everybody, for listening. I hope you're enjoying the show and learning a lot. America Out Loud Pulse is by doctors and for patients. And we've got free apps on Apple, Android, and Alexa. And we're on every weekday at 5 Eastern, an encore at 10 Eastern, and the next morning on iHeartRadio at 8 a.m. All shows go to podcast in 24 hours. So make it easy. Bookmark AmericaOutLoud.com.
While many things we hear are lies, we know one thing is true. Viruses exist and people get sick. Look, there's no guaranteed way to keep from getting sick, but there is a way to reduce your chances. Cofix RX, the original povidone iodine-based antiviral nasal spray that you hear Dr. McCullough talking about, provides an additional, invisible layer of protection from colds, flu, coronaviruses, and more. Click the banner ad on AmericaOutLoud.com and use promo code OUTLOUD for 20% off. Stay protected with Cofix RX.
People often ask me, Malcolm, how do we fight the corruption? Robert Frost has said it best, freedom lies in being bold. Well, for 6 incredible years, bold is America Out Loud. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Okay, so back to this whole idea of people who are vulnerable, poor, can't afford it, government taking care of it. So how do we pull all that together?
Well, you know, I think it's interesting. You mentioned the Hispanic community. I think they're a good one to look at. I'm not sure other parts of the country, but, you know, in Texas, we see a lot of little clinicas that are just in strip centers here and there, and they're usually packed. They don't take insurance. They're all cash based. And what's just remarkable about them is that they have all of their prices in marker on the window as you walk in, and people are paying cash. You look at, we talked about Medicaid just a moment ago as well. We did a pictorial and an interview with a physician in the Rio Grande Valley in South Texas. He is a direct primary care physician. And, you know, it's an interesting market. There's in Harlingen, there's a 60% incidence of metabolic disease, diabetes. But even though they have Medicaid, it's weeks and weeks, and if not months, to get in to see the doctor. And so with people clamoring, he's given Medicaid patients, people that have the insurance card, the supposed access, he's given them scholarships to be a part of his practice so that they can get the care that they need. So just because you have insurance doesn't mean that you're going to get health care, because they're different, right? We established that earlier.
That's right. And in fact, just recently I read that one of the systems, and I can't tell you exactly where, is getting in trouble because they put out these lists of doctors who supposedly were on the list, and they weren't. They hadn't taken patients for months. And so you're so right that just because you have an insurance card, and that includes a Medicaid card, doesn't mean you're going to get care. So what happens when patients with chronic diseases have, whether it's direct care or some sort of model where they're paying a lot out of pocket, that they're going to have to pay a lot? Should they have some sort of insurance?
Well, I think I'm not dispelling the fact that insurance is needed. I think, you know, we have home insurance, and that's a wise thing to do. We have car insurance, and besides it being a matter of law, it's also a smart thing to do. I think health insurance, true health insurance, is demonstrates wisdom. But that doesn't necessarily mean that it would help chronic disease patients in all, because I have a friend, Dr. Diana Granita, who is a rheumatologist, and she now has a direct rheumatology clinic. And rheumatology, as you know, is an auto, you know, it deals with patients with autoimmune diseases. And they're able to get in faster. They're able to spend time with her. They're able to get affordable care. Just because you have insurance doesn't mean that you're going to get the best deal. And we're finding that out the more that we look at the hospitals that are being transparent with their prices. The variability of pricing negotiated with the insurance company is profound. It is just remarkable what some insurers pay. And who does that hurt? It hurts the patients, because most everyone has a deductible, and you'll be capping out. And then once you hit your deductible, you have a coinsurance up to a maximum out of pocket. Those dollar amounts, they get rather large. And isn't insurance a transfer of risk? It doesn't seem to be much of a transfer these days. And many of those patients end up in bankruptcy because of medical debt. And the majority of those have insurance.
Wow. You know, it seems to me, just looking at what we've been talking about, that you need direct primary care or some sort of cash-based practice for your day-to-day stuff, your basic mammograms, episode like you described. And then you need insurance for hospital, because unless you're, you know, Elon Musk, who could afford to pay a hospital bill, because they've become so hyperinflated, again, because the insurance, it's like, hey, people don't see the real cost of that, so let's just charge more. So you're kind of forced, because of the high hospital bills, to have that kind of insurance. And in the old days, I mean, that's what I had, where you just have hospital insurance, and then you paid for day-to-day things out of pocket. And I just don't know what happened to that model.
It wasn't profitable enough.
I guess then the bottom line, because, you know, and this is something I tell people all the time, think about it. Most people aren't sick. And the ones that do get sick, sometimes they're very big ticket items and, you know, does eat into the profits. No question about it.
Yeah, it does. You know, and the average deductible in an insurance plan in this country is around $5,000, and it's creeped up. It's over $5,000, and 80% of Americans never hit their full deductible. That's information that comes from the insurance industry. So what does that mean? Effectively, we're cash patients. If we're responsible before insurance companies put in dollar number one, we're cash patients and we're relying on them. We're saying, well, I want to use my insurance because I believe my insurance company has negotiated a better rate for me. Well, that's not true. You can get a far better rate. And oftentimes up to a 90% discount from the insurance negotiated rate by using the cash price. If you go in and say, I am a cash patient, what is your cash price? The numbers you will hear are remarkable.
Well, I can certainly attest to that. Being an anesthesiologist, I was pretty much always hospital-based. And for certain cases where people didn't have insurance, we'd have to deal with the business office and say, okay, you know, we have to guesstimate a price. We could guesstimate a price that was way different from the insured price. And the hospitals themselves, and again, this is a caution to the listeners and kind of a little tip from my husband. If you don't ask, you won't get a discount. That you'd be amazed at the kind of response you get if you just ask. Mm-hmm. And somehow people, you know, have been trained not to open their mouths and say just what you said. What will happen if I pay cash? And you'd be stunned at the difference in price.
And if I may, I'll share a coworker asked me, they said, David, with insurance, it is over $1,300 for this test that my doctor has prescribed for me. And I said, you know, you should probably ask for the cash price because this person isn't going to hit their deductible. And so they asked for the cash price and the cash price was $323. And then I said, well, if you offer to pay all up front in advance of the service, ask for another discount. And they got one.
Mm-hmm. Now that they've made healthcare a commodity and a service, which it is, because people are giving of their time and education and knowledge. And most of the time, patients, yeah, you kind of know when you have a cold or whatever, but there's a lot of knowledge that you're only going to get by going to the doctor, going to someone in the health field to find out what's wrong with you. So of course you should pay for that. But what we've learned is also paying for something yourself gives you some sense of ownership of it. I remember when I worked at the Chinese Free Clinic in San Francisco when I was in school, the nurse said, now remember, even though you got these pills for free from the drug company, you have to charge the patient. And we would charge the patient a quarter or 50 cents. And the nurse would say, if they don't pay for it, they won't think it works. And there was even a big study that they did with people where the more expensive the drug was, the better it, quote unquote, worked on the patient, even though it was all the same drug. They just told the patients they were different prices. So
I think that's just human nature. If we don't ascribe value to something, and that includes financial value, then it's not as important. It's not as a high priority.
Well, it certainly shows. And if patients knew the prices and they knew everything you suggested, ask, see the price difference, they might change the way they deal with the healthcare system. One of the things that we're finding in pricing, even, you know, I talked about hospitals and how expensive they are, is now there's direct pay surgery centers. And you know, one other great thing the Affordable Care Act did was limit the number of hospitals that could be owned by doctors. And these are the ones that are doing these direct pay prices that are, what, one-fifth, if not more, the price of what it would be if you went to a regular hospital and got, for example, a knee replacement or something.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely true. I mean, let's start with the surgery centers and direct pricing and then talk about the moratorium on physician ownership of hospitals. Most people have heard of the Surgery Center of Oklahoma. They're the standard bearer for this kind of model. And they've proven that it can be done. It's not a matter of theory. It's happening every day. And employers are flying their employees from all over the country to Oklahoma, of all places. My apologies to you Oklahomans on that.
But, it's that Texas-Oklahoma rivalry.
It really is.
Do tell.
They're to the north of us, so they're Yankees. But they're sending them to this place, and it really is just a fascinating and wonderful organization. You can go on there and pick whatever surgery that is on their site, and they've got quite a few of them. And it will include a price, not an estimate, a price. And that includes your anesthesiologist, your surgeon, the facility, and in some cases, even physical therapy afterwards if it's a total knee. And that's included in the price. It's a one and done model that allows you to know going in what to expect. One story that I heard about that organization, there was a woman in Georgia who needed to have surgery, and she was quoted by the local hospital there. It was $45,000. And that was just the hospital component, not the surgeon, not the anesthesiologist, just the hospital, $45,000. And she went online and found Surgery Center of Oklahoma. And their price all in was just over $4,000, if I remember correctly. She went back to the hospital and said, "I'm going to Oklahoma." And you know what the hospital did? You know what they did in response?
What?
They matched their price.
Oh, there you go.
Immediately. How do you drop your price? Well, what is that? That's 90%. That's a 90% decrease immediately without thinking about it. Think about the waste and just the glut that exists in our current system. It's maddening. Yes, there is an opportunity to do that. The physician-owned hospitals, of which I was very proud to be the CEO of a number, oftentimes had lower infection rates, better quality outcomes, and we were more affordable. But the ACA made sure of, and it was the hospitals as well. They lobbied for this. They did not want doctors to be able to open their own hospitals. They said it was a violation of their power because they could, you know, they were going to order more tests or order more surgeries, which I never really found to be true for the most part. But here we are today with hospitals not only employing doctors, but they're also owning insurance companies. They're almost completely vertically integrated with an incredible amount of power, and they're not being checked.
Well, that's the scary part. It's like, who was it? CVS owning part of Aetna. So if you have your health insurance from Aetna, they'll tell you to get your drugs at CVS. It's really so collusive. And I think patients are starting to notice now. And even some of the tortured logic they use, like, oh, well, then the doctor order more tests. How can their place be profitable? People won't come back if they've been financially abused. You've got to treat people well, not only medically, but financially in order to get customers. So this whole idea to me seems like it's just a road to the government trying to take over the entire healthcare system.
It is that, as well as a select group of organizations and special interests that want to be the arm for the government to do just that.
Well, all I can say is thank goodness for people like you. So I want the listeners to know, we have so much more to say. You have to promise me, promise that you will come back. Got to do it right now. Raise your right hand.
You don't even have to twist my arm. I can't believe it's already been an hour.
I know. Can you believe it? Tell us about Free to Care, the website, how to spell it, how people can see your complete plan, and how they can get in touch.
If you go to www.free2care.org, free2care.org, That's our website. That's who we are. We have started an individual membership program. If you'd like to be a part of our effort, there's a small fee to become a member as an individual, and we have a lot of wonderful value that you'll get in return. But more important than that, we want you to be active. We want you to be engaged. That's really where our strength is. We don't want to give money to politicians. They've got enough. We're a C4. So any donation to us is not tax deductible. And we were doing that on purpose because we want a seat at the table. We want to be able to influence and move legislation. And you can't do that as a tax deductible C3. So we purposely got away from that model so that doctors and patients could have a voice. So if you'd like to be a part of that, we'd love to have you join us and help magnify our voice.
Well, thank you. And I'm sure people will. And just remember that we all have a voice. Thank you very much, David Bilott. And thank you, everybody, for listening to America Out Loud Pulse. And remember, our free app, See Something's Free, on Apple, Android, and Alexa. You hear us every weekday at 5 p.m., Encore at 10, and the next morning on iHeartRadio at 8. Mondays, you've got me, Tuesdays with Dr. Jordan Vaughn and Dr. Stuart Tankersley from Concerned Doctors, Wednesdays with Dr. Peter McCullough, and Thursdays with Dr. Peter Bregan and Ginger Ross Bregan, and Fridays with scientist Dr. James Lyons Weiler. So whether you agree or have other opinions, please share the show. And until next week, say it loud, I'm free and I'm proud.